You can find Level Up Language Podcast on lulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at lulpodcast. You can also subscribe to Level Up Language Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and now TuneIn Radio. Level Up is sponsored by Davis School District and Clearfield High School. We hope you enjoy, and thanks for listening. Today's episode is all about project-based language learning, or PBLL. We have two special guests from the district that we've invited here today, and we're excited to talk to. We hope to give you another technique to add to your quiver of proficiency teaching skills. So let's jump right in to Level Up. Brandon Welker, your host for today, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Miles Nance. We are missing Roger Burt and Davin Lemke again today. They are apparently recovering from their actful adventures.
If you happen to know where they are, please pick up the white courtesy phone. Thank you.
That would help us all. No, they will be back next week to talk about some of the things they learned at ACTFL. Well, welcome to Level Up Language Podcast, and we are here with two special guests today. We have Ingrid Campos and Fermin Soriano, two teachers from Davis School District. Ingrid is at Layton High School, and Fermin is at Viewmont High School. And they are here to talk to us about project-based language learning, acronymed PBLL. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So let's just start by you guys telling us who you are, and kind of your background with the language. Obviously, you're native Spanish speakers, and how you got into teaching and how you got to Utah, I guess. So, Ingrid, can we start with you?
Yeah, sure. I've been teaching for 11 years. Nine of those were in Madrid, Spain, and I decided to move to Utah with my family 3 years ago. So this is my third year here in Davis School District, teaching Spanish 4, Spanish 5, AP, math. I have a couple of math subjects that I really like to teach too. And last year I had the opportunity to be part of this bridge course project. So I started it, and now I have that class for students that pass the AP. So yeah, I really like all my classes. I do love to teach the language and the culture. And also, I like to teach math.
Awesome. So a little bit of math and a lot of language. From Spain to Utah is a long ways. How did you choose Utah? Do you have family or friends?
No, there is a program. It's like, how would I say this in English?
It's exchange teacher?
Yeah.
Exchange okay. visitors? Or?
Yeah. So we had to apply, and Fermin did too, but longer. So we apply for this program. We have to have interviews, a lot of paperwork, and then you apply for a state. Actually, I applied for Colorado, but they didn't like me there. So they decided to switch me to Utah, and here I am.
Their loss is our gain, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're glad you ended up here. All right, Fermin, how about you?
Well, so as Ingrid, I live in all my life in Spain. I was born and raised there, and I've been teaching for 17 years so far. I was focusing on language teaching all my life, my teaching life, and history sometimes. And now, so I came with the same program that Ingrid, with the exchange visitor teachers. It's like an agreement that governments from the U.S. and Spain have, and we come here and just do our teaching, and then.
Are you here for a certain number of years, or
we come
just
basically with 3 years to start with, and then I think it's up to the districts or schools if they want us to stay longer or not. So I started in elementary. In immersion elementary, and now actually I'm teaching the bridge. So I was asked to teach the bridge class with Ingrid, and now I'm teaching in two schools, between Viewmont and Farmington Junior High, where gave me the experience to know the students from pre-AP to post-AP,
right,
which is so rich.
So you guys both mentioned bridge classes, which will probably, I'm sure it'll come up later a little bit. But basically that is high schools and universities working together, right?
So yeah. So it's like the last stage and of the immersion classes, but actually it's not pure immersion because all the only requirement is all the students that pass the AP can join the class.
Okay. So with a 3,000, 4 or 5 on the AP test.
Yeah.
Then you can join the bridge class. Uh-huh. And then it's, I got you. Okay.
Yeah. And the great thing of this class, besides that it's taught by a high school teacher and a college professor, is they can get like 3 upper division credits.
Oh, okay. So in high school, they can get some upper division credits.
Yeah,
so
it's a 3,000 level.
That's
class.
Awesome. Because we have CE, but those are all lower level classes, yeah. You know, the 1,000 and 2,000 level classes, I guess. So anyway, awesome. Okay, yeah. And sorry, one more time. You said how long have you been in Davis School District, Ingrid?
This is my third year.
Third year here. And
this is my fifth year.
Your fifth year here. Awesome. Great. Well, we hear awesome things about you guys. So, and thank we you. Appreciate you being here. So we have you guys here because you are our resident experts on project-based language. So we want to ask you what that is, you know, just in general, what project-based language learning is, how that's related to proficiency, those kinds of things. So we'll just start with Fermin. Can you tell us how you got into project-based learning?
We were proposed from the Bridge course director to participate in this webinar. So we jump in, and the idea was to implement PBLL in our Bridge course classes.
Okay. Okay, so the Bridge class director at Weber State? Is that what that's
No, she's part of the, it's like an assessment okay. department for languages in the University okay. of Utah that promotes languages, and they are kind of promoting the Bridge class. And we are in pilot okay. mode. We are only 8 schools this year. Next year we're going to be 23.
Okay.
And the following
from 7 years, from 8 to 23?
Yeah.
Do you mean in Davis School District?
No, in the whole Utah. State.
In the state?
Okay.
We started with 4 last
we
year.
With
we
four,
are
7, 8. I'm not sure even one in
That's still
in
a, that's a big jump, 7 or 8 to 23.
Yeah, because there's coming with us now Chinese and French.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. Okay, so the Bridge course people at the University of Utah that oversee and I guess work with other universities since you're doing bridge courses through Weber State invited you to take part in this training in Hawaii.
Language. First of all, we had to do the online one. So, okay. we had to attend 5 sessions on a webinar and then we had to design our own project for a class. So we could have picked any other Spanish class, but we picked the Bridge class for sure. So everyone doing the online training had to do that project and fill in a blueprint, which was like 30 pages long. So it was a lot of work because it was the whole project developed there on paper. After we did that online, we had to do the feedback from other. We had to read other people's project. Then people in University of Hawaii review them, and they picked like 20.
They select, yes, like 20 out of all the participants. There were some grants. We didn't get to get any money mm-hmm. from the University of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. But still, we were selected. Our projects were selected to go there and participate in the intensive summer institute.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Davis School District sponsored us. So thank you to them that we could make it. And it was really good to be there. And we had a lot of feedback. And when we attend the summer institute in Hawaii, we had a project written in that blueprint that we both worked together on developing. And when we arrived there, we changed everything. So we were just reviewing it, and our project changed a lot. But they're good.
And I mean, it's a life-changing attending to one event like this because the leaders were amazing. So there's people of the size of Charisse Montgomery, teach, like leading us about the scaffolding or Stephen Schutte, which is wonderful. He has bright ideas.
Yeah.
So that was amazing.
So you met people from all over the place.
All over the state, the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the country, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, great. So you've been at this for a while, the project-based language learning. And so just to be clear, I'm just going to throw this in there. We talked about you guys using it for your bridge courses, but this is really applicable at any level. Is that correct?
At any level, at any subject, at any. So PBLL is the variation of PBL, project-based learning. So it's only applied to languages.
So this is just a good way to teach in general, a good modern way to teach in general for any content.
That's an amazing way.
And we're now applying it to languages.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. We know how you got into this. We want to hear what project-based language learning is. That's kind of the meat of this whole episode is what is it and kind of how can we use it and give us an idea of how this helps our students. So Fermin, can I start with you? Would you just start off explaining to us what project-based learning is?
Yes, I have a formal definition that I got from the Boyk Institute of Education. They are specialists in project-based learning. So basically they define that the project-based learning is a teaching method in which students gain knowledge and skills by working for an extended period of time to investigate and respond to an authentic, engaging, and complex question, problem, or challenge.
Okay.
So that's a lot in there.
So each of these challenges that you give them last for an extended period of time. It's not just in one class period.
Really. Not normally. I think you cannot put everything in just one class period. You need at least, I would say, a week.
Or even more. And whatever you try to do a project and you schedule for so many weeks, it's probably going to take longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it is for an extended period of time before doing the PBLL Online Institute, we have done a fashion show. And it was a pretty long project. It was not PBLL because it didn't cover all the requirements for PBLL. It took us a long time, but it was a dessert project. So when PBLL, we learned that we don't finish a unit by doing a project, like a fashion show. You do the whole unit towards the project. The whole unit is the project. So it's different, an ending project or like a PowerPoint presentation or a little video, whatever, at the end of the unit. PBLL is the whole unit, if it makes sense.
Yeah, so you're saying maybe a typical way to design a unit is you have the framework of the unit with one or two projects inside of it. But you're saying now that the unit fits inside the framework of a project.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
So I have another definition, if I may, less informal. So it's like something that I came up, like put together, cut it and paste things.
Yeah, sure.
So I think project-based learning or language learning, it's a style of active learning and inquiry-based learning. So project-based learning is comprehensive. It's a comprehensive perspective. Focus on teaching by engaging a student in investigation, research, and develop a product.
Okay.
So I have an example of a personal project.
Yeah.
Now imagine that your house has so many light, no? And you want to build some curtains. So this is your essential question, no? How can I block the light to come into my house?
Mm-hmm.
So you need to investigate different techniques of sewing, right? You need to know like key characteristics of fabrics. You need to learn how to sew, how to use a sewing machine. So you have to do this research and inquiry of so many different aspects, right? And then you have to probably see someone else's ideas and probably see someone else's working on curtains, and probably you need to try and fail, right? And then you can also compare when you finish your first draft product, maybe that will be your final product, but you need to compare and see if it's going to fit into your windows or not. Okay. And then you are going into at the end, probably if you are an overachiever, you can go into the aesthetics pane and see color matching with your walls or your house style or everything. So, and then finally at the end, when you make them, you just send invitations to your friends and to a tea party and see your fabulous work, your fabulous final product. Yeah. So basically, this is applied to a personal life experience, but you can do the same at school. I mean, I like to simplify things in that way. I don't know if that helps.
Yes, that actually had just occurred to me how I might explain project-based learning. It's and how it ties to proficiency. So this podcast is really all about teaching to proficiency, right? Like you, rather than expect a list of words or verbs, we've talked about this, we expect skills and we assess skills. And project-based learning, based on just what you described right there, seems like, you know, we have all the proficiencies listed that we want in a unit. We say you need to be able to, just thinking of level one, simply introduce yourself and describe yourself a little bit and describe things you like and don't like. Project-based learning seems like you're taking a bundle of those proficiencies and making them work through all of them kind of at once, or like kind of in a more complete context rather than just pulling aside and say, introduce yourself. Well, maybe your task is, I can't think of a level one task, but well, just back to your curtain example. So you start with the problem of figuring out the construction of blocking the light and picking the right material and making the bar fit and all that stuff. And then you move on to the aesthetics, like you were saying, the way it looks and which type of fabric or whatever you're going to use. And you talk about the product after and being able to evaluate it and talk to people about the whole thing. So really, I would think that that's really an infinite number of proficiency skills that you can assess multiple things out of one project. So anyway, do I have that right? Does that sound right?
Yeah, and I think you have mentioned several points really interesting. Like you give them a context to work with, so they are not learning like isolated pieces of languages, like saying hola or, right, you know, bonjour, and for what? You know, and then you mentioned, and then you were talking about proficiency, but sometimes in our language classes, we make them just performance. So we have those differences and we integrate and make the difference like, put everything together. We don't need them just performance, the language. We need to be proficient.
Right. That's great. That's awesome. I mean, honestly, before you guys came, I know what a project is. I teach math too, actually. And I was trying to think, how can I explain that this is tied to proficiency? But that was a great example. That actually really helped me a lot. So can you tell us then kind of how, I mean, just break it down a little bit, and maybe I'll ask Ingrid. I wrote down here, my note is just, what are the rules of project-based learning? I mean, you can't just say, go make a movie or go build some curtains. You got to give them some rules, right? And guidelines. How do you start your unit if it's a project like that?
So, for sure, you need to think about not being a dessert project. It's a whole unit, right? So it's going to take a long time. It's going to be, you're going to assess the different modes of communication, right? Presentational, interpersonal, and interpretive, mm-hmm, through the whole project, right? I'll begin with that it has to be real, which is very important in the PBLL. Is there something that has to be out of the room, right? It has to be challenging, a word challenge, and it has to be real. Sometimes it's difficult, right? So you could do a simulation, the closest to the real world, the better. It requires a community partner. It's always really helpful and really motivated for the students to have someone from the target culture coming to the room, coming to their classroom and having them do an interview or having a guest speaker. So real person helping on the project, that's basic. That's something it should be in all the project. Interview is another key task that all project, all PBLL projects should have. So there, by doing the interview, they'll have to use their real language. They'll have the interpersonal task, and it will motivate them a lot. For sure, we want the students to have voice and choice. So sometimes, like the final product of the project, you could leave it open and they could pick. Do I want to create a video? Do I want to do like a PowerPoint? Do I want to write a little story? Do I want to do a comic? So the students do what they like. So students' voice and choice is another key part of the project. For sure, using the 21st century skills and culture needs to be part of the project. So as you see, there are so many little pieces that you need to cover. You'll have to, like the teacher that creates and proposes the project will design a driving question. A driving question would be an open question that you cannot Google. So you will give that question to the students and they will have to start thinking, brainstorming, how are they going to solve that problem? Trying to answer to that question. So there you're giving them the voice and choice too, right? Because you could try to answer that question in one way, but your friend would answer the question in another way, right? So those are things that, I don't know if Fermín wants to add anything else. Those are rules that you'll have to be careful and use in that project. There is so many little pieces that you have to join together to do a good project.
No, and I think Ingrid just mainly point the most important things. And if you want to learn more about this, there is the gold standards that the Burke Institute of Education has in their webpage that every single project-based learning project should follow to be like a real project-based learning project.
We're going to link all of that stuff on our website. So for all of our listeners, be sure to check LULpodcast.com and see the notes after the show airs.
We'll probably throw some tweets out there too.
Yeah, throw some tweets.
I don't think you throw tweets, but we'll do some tweets.
Let me just recap again and make sure that I kind of understand here. Does the whole thing start out with the driving question, would you say?
Yeah.
So can you just give me an example off the top of your head? Like, we'll talk more about what you did for your project, but what was the driving question for your project, would you say?
So the driving question of the project that we are actually developing right now in our bridge classes is how can we help to preserve history and traditions of people in the community with a Spanish origin?
So that's a pretty loaded question. They can't just go put it in Google and get an easy answer and have something to say. This is something that's going to take a lot of thought and different skills to solve, right? Yep.
That's right.
So this is the beginning of your project. And like you said, any project starts with this driving question. After you've established this question, where do you go from there on your project? So this is the beginning of your unit, right? After that question, where do you take the kids after that, the students?
So what is really very important is to have them really motivated by this driving question and entry event, the first activity you create for the project, and is really key. It's really important. So they get excited and they just can't wait to come to your room and keep developing the project. So what we did for sure was to show them a couple of videos of people speaking in Spanish, telling their family story, but at some point, those people don't remember anything, or at some point, they don't know what happened with grandma that was in north of Spain, and because the story is not written anywhere, and because everyone in the family forgot. So it was kind of sad watching a couple of videos, and our student was like, and now what? What's the end of the story? So after showing them those two videos, they were like, oh, that can happen. We have to help people remember their stories because they are pretty interesting stories in the community, right? People coming from Mexico to Utah. How did it come over here? Why did I do it? So they were getting excited to research and find these cool and interesting stories to preserve. So what we did a brainstorm. How can we do this? And they got a bunch of ideas. For sure, we wanted to lead them to the magazine that we want to create, right? So we have them talk about it. How are we going to do this? Oh, we have to interview. We have to have that story written. We have to create a video, right?
Even a theater, they propose in a class.
Oh, like a play.
For theater, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So by doing those really important entry events, you create them to keep working in the project. After that, we for sure did some content. We talk about history, right? We talk about Columbus. We did a bunch of activities. Then for sure, we're talking about identity, right? We are preserving the history of unknown people that has, Spanish speaking identity for sure. So we talk about their identity and, so they also work on some objects that identify them. So we're going to study some other people's identity, right? With the Spanish origin. So first we should learn about ourselves. That's why we also talk in class about their identity as, American teenagers, right? After that, we started to see and brainstorm who are we going to interview and who is going to be willing to be part of this project. So we created a Google form and they were talking about, oh, my neighbor is from Colombia. Maybe I could ask her. Oh, my sixth grade teacher was from Puerto Rico. So I'll go and ask him. So they have this big list of people that they are going to interview in pairs, and they, for sure, they want to introduce the project and in a polite way. So we practice the formal Spanish language by writing an email. They all know how to write a formal email because it's one of the AP tasks, but it's good to review. So they wrote an email on their own. Then they did in a partner, and they now have their formal final email that they need to send to this Spanish-speaking person that they're going to interview, presenting the project, presenting themselves, and ask him to collaborate in the project. So it's a real email that they're sending to a real person. So it is pretty important. They wrote millions of emails for the AP test, but they never sent it to anyone. So now they're going to do that. After they have the email and they have to do the interview, we're going to have a guest speaker in the room in a class. She's a specialist on journalism and she's going to teach them how to do a good interview to get a lot of information. So they'll have to for sure practice first with their peers. Even Fermin and I are thinking on doing Skype in between our classes. So my fifth period class would Skype with his fifth period class, Viewmont, to practice an interview. And then we'll probably have a foreign exchange student from Spain in the class so they could practice again how to do a good interview before doing the final interview. So it takes a lot of scaffolding, a lot of practice. Right? Because at first they were writing the questions and they were asking questions, close questions, that it will not give them a lot of information. And after the interview, they get all the history of that person. They're going to write an article. So they need a lot of information. If they write close questions, they're not going to get enough material to create that stories for the magazine. So we are right now in the point that they're going to contact that person. We're practicing, we're starting with the interviews right now, and then they'll do the interview in their own. There are two people in the group, it's a pair. They'll record the interview. They're going to ask to record the interview so they have the information on a video, and then they'll write a story for a magazine, and we'll put together all the stories on the magazine. And we want to create that magazine and take it to a heritage museum in the city. So it's a real magazine.
That's a complete experience, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, from an idea to a final product And back to the beginning just for a minute. Before you decided on the magazine as the product, I can't remember if you said the whole class decide that, or do you have the partnerships choose a product? So who chose the magazine? Was it the class that did that, or did you just say,
we had the the brainstorming with them, and most of them were say writing the story. So some of them were doing videos, and we're even considering doing a video at the end too, right? But most of them were saying writing. So we told them, why don't we write little short stories and then just put together a magazine, and they all liked that.
That's good. So that's the voice and choice part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. They chose, you gave them this question and they said, this is how we want to present our solution.
They're also choosing who are they going to interview. That's another part.
Part of the choice.
So. Yeah. We know a lot of people with a Spanish speaking origin, but for sure, we don't know so many for 125 students, right? Yeah. So they're thinking, oh, I want to interview this, and I want to interview this neighbor, or my uncle has a friend. So they're choosing who do they want to interview. So we also decided that they were doing in partners, and they are choosing their partner because it is a long project, and we want them to feel comfortable, and they're going to do the interview outside of the school. So it has to be easy for them to meet with that person. And we gave them. And as we go, this is a really, I did a summary of the whole project. So that you think this project was going to be like one unit, one term, and we're going to finish it by the end of the school year. So it's been a really long process. All the practicing, it's taking long time. So we decided that instead of two projects that we at first thought about, Fermín's project and my project, we're just doing my project this year, and next year we'll do Fermín. So this way you see how much work and scaffolding it requires.
Very cool. When you talk about some of these other hallmarks of project-based learning that you talked about, 21st century skills, for example. So I'm assuming that means technology, Fermín?
Yes, of course. So, when you have to do any project, the first thing that you do is Google it.
Yeah.
To Google it.
Right.
Go there and look where to start. Or just go to YouTube, this wonderful thing where you can find videos how to do whatever. So you need to have those 21st century skills. We're talking about incorporate the email. We're talking about how to record an interview, because they have to do a reflection about the interview. So they need to see how much they grew before, and or how was the before and after of the interview. So that implies so many things. They have to do communication. They have to do collaboration. They have to do all those C's that they are into the 21st century skills that any business company needs or requires for their employees. They have to work together. They have to communicate, to collaborate. They have to be like on top of things. They have really good in technology. They have to learn. So it's a never ending process. We could go with this project forever if we want to.
Right. And this, it feels like to me that if you build a project correctly, that you're really incorporating everything that we want to teach a student. Right. I mean, you're teaching them making a choice, following through on a long project, being creative, using technology, and of course, showing that they're proficient in the content along the way. When it comes to the grading side of things, is the final product the main thing that you look at and determine if they are proficient? Or are you giving them small grades along the way, like a grade for the interview and a grade for the article? And
so when you design a project, you set the student learning outcomes, okay? Mm-hmm. So, of course, as Ingrid mentioned, we have to do a huge work scaffolding. Mm-hmm. So they need, and to be honest, we need to put grades. But if you implement, you grade the language proficiency, the language performance, how they accomplish the proposed tasks, and yes, you put like little grades. I mean, I won't give a grade to the final product. The final product is probably just rewarding for itself.
Just to see it, yeah. Their term grade would be a composite of all these little things that they've done.
Yeah, that are completely related to the learning outcome. So every single task has a part of the learning outcome as an objective.
And we are grading using the IPA model. So every term we do them an interpretive task. So they have to read whatever article and answer some questions. Then they have the presentational task and then interpersonal. Like today they did the interpersonal task and it was responding an email to the vice principal of the school that is asking what is going on in your bridge class that I heard that you're doing a project. What is the project about? So it was the interpersonal they had to answer and they were talking about the project. What have you been doing in the class for the last few weeks? They practice how to write that formal email. And they know the content because that's what they have been doing. So you see, this is an example of one of the assessment that they had today.
It almost makes it like everything is an assessment that they're doing.
I want to kind of jump in with the assessments as I'm pretty sure it was you, Ingrid, when you were talking about the different things that you're doing as you go throughout the year and you're realizing this is like a year long project. It seemed like you have multiple pieces that go with it. And in each one of those could potentially be a term assessment, like the interview with somebody. You build throughout that term about, you know, asking questions and being able to listen and understand and being able to take notes, because listening is hard enough, listening and taking notes. So they seem like mini projects as a part of the whole project. Is that a fair way to kind of think of it? And those mini projects are kind of like the assignments or assessments that you're doing?
They are called tasks.
Okay.
So, I mean, they're not like an exercise or whatever. They are tasks that they have to accomplish. So it's like the little pieces of a chain, you know, that they connect to.
Like a puzzle or something, maybe.
Yeah,
that
they doing this to little, each other.
You're doing the pieces that are blue right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then next unit, you're going to be doing the pieces that have red and orange in it. And at the end, you've got a big old puzzle piece, but you don't really see it until.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, one final little discussion here, if that's okay. You guys teach bridge courses. And so your question was, how do you preserve cultural identity for people living in Utah that are Spanish heritage? You said it better than I did, but that kind of a question, you can't really ask to a level one student, right? Would you have to, you've probably thought about this more in context of a bridge course, but it seems to me that it can be done. It seems to me that it can be done at any level, but it seems to me that your driving question would have to be carefully selected so that they can do some tasks to solve that are within their abilities. Does that make sense? I mean, you couldn't do the same project in a bridge course that you could in a level one class.
I would say, I mean, this question is challenging, but if you think about what a level one student would be able to do, could a level one maybe ask what's your favorite food? Mm-hmm. Or maybe a level two? I mean, we're talking about the history. Our students, they need to achieve the advanced low, so they need to learn how to narrate in the past. That's why this project really suits. But depending on how you scaffold and what the requirements that you set, maybe a level one student would be able to do. I mean, I don't teach Spanish one, but I could think about food more basic.
Level one is a lot about descriptions, simplifying it to something of how do identities of Spanish heritage people in Utah differ, or how are they similar or different to non-Spanish heritage identities? So, I mean, that's similar, but it's simple enough, I think, because you're just talking about what do they like to do? What do they not like to do? A lot of stuff. I think it could be simplified.
Actually, in Hawaii, we have a really good example. We were part of a project that was the first thing that we did in our course in Hawaii. We were Chinese level, I would say minus one, because I'm really bad at Chinese. We were learners of Chinese language, and we did a project. And even we did an interview with a Chinese person, and I had to go and ask that Chinese person whatever, I cannot repeat it anymore. And I was a level zero or minus one learner, and I got my project.
You're still able to do it. Huh?
Yeah. I have a question about that. So I bet going into that interview, and I'm just, how nervous were you going into the interview?
It was awful.
But then after you did the interview and you were able to finish your project, how did you feel afterwards?
Awesome. And I do have my magazine in my classroom, and we created with all the workshop people a magazine, like the Junior Ranger thing that there are in the national parks. We created a little kids booklet for the Hawaii Plantation Village. So our magazine, our little kids booklet is there, and it has our names, and it has our activity in Chinese. So I was so motivated that that mini project that we were part of really got me to understand what are my students feel when I speak my fast Spanish and they don't understand what I'm saying for the first thing. And then because it was a real product in a real place, I was just so happy that you will never imagine.
Yeah. So that's very motivating. I can imagine, because you know that this is really going to be shown to Chinese speaking kids.
Yep.
And you created it, and it's not your language.
It is not. So it will never be.
And that's, you mentioned exactly what I was thinking, and kind of, I was going to try to lead you there, but you already went there, is that you know how the students feel that, and we as teachers, we all are, at some point we're new with a language, so we know what it's like to struggle and be afraid. And, but once you're able to do it, how amazing it makes you feel. And so, I think as teachers, we need to make sure the students know that we understand the position that they're in. And if you work along with us and you get to where we expect you to be able to go, it's going to be very rewarding.
That's really powerful, actually, thinking about that, because, I mean, we've all been in foreign countries. Miles has been in France. I've been in Germany. You guys are here in a foreign land, I guess.
Yep.
But it is a thrill. Even to speak a basic line of a foreign language to a real native speaker, because it's your product and it's really being utilized in a real situation. So anyway, that's really a great thought about PBLL, is that these things are really being used.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's probably part of the challenge of learning to be a good PBL teacher, which I'm not, but I'm actually find this really, really interesting, is learning how to make it a real product and to show the kids, like, this is really going to be in a heritage museum in Salt Lake City, or this is really going to be read by German tourists here at Zions Park or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. And it fits into some of the previous episodes. We were talking about one of the strategies that they're really big on now in our district is the I do, we do, you do. And the I do, you're scaffolding Fermin and Ingrid with what you're trying to get them to learn how to do, a lot of scaffolding that I do, and then you do it together. And then whether it's the task they're working on or the project as a whole, that's the you do part. And it's a huge portion, and it everything fits. It seems like, I've been doing projects in classes, but for me, I definitely want to get to where I have more of an in-depth experience for the students instead of just, here's a project, it's done with, let's move on to the next one. So for me, this is going to be fantastic. I'm trying not to use the word fantastic. This is going to be great going forward.
Yeah, instead of just for me to use. Turning it in, hand it back.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really important. Like, the role of the teacher is a facilitator. So you don't really teach anything. You're facilitating then all the logistics and give them all the tools and offering them all the options. And your work really is scaffolding. You need to make sure that every single thing that you are going to do, they understand and they know how to get there.
Yeah.
So that's the role of the teacher. So we need to switch our minds a little bit.
You know, one other benefit that just came to mind about PBLL that I'm just imagining. I think it was something you said, Ingrid, that made me think of this, but we talked last time about, Davin Lemke, one of our hosts, I think, was talking about, he used a phrase, I can't remember, transitioning into the language for the period or whatever.
Yeah. We mentioned a couple strategies about doing that.
Yeah. This almost helps them continue from class to class without having to get everyone worked up to be speaking the foreign language again. It's like they know exactly what they're going to be doing, and it just keeps going and it rolls for, you know, several weeks at a time rather than kind of a big effort to get everyone back in the foreign language every day on something different, I guess. I don't know. It seems like a good way to keep kids.
Especially if it's something that they feel a part of and they have that voice and that choice. Just dive right in and they're going to be ready to go.
Something very important is keep in mind when you think about a project is why students care. If you think about your driving question, then rethink and reread it. And why do they care? And when you answer that question, your project would be successful. They need to care about it. Otherwise, they will not be motivated.
That's the hard part of teaching is when they're not motivated.
So. Sometimes it's you have to kind of trick them into being excited for it and find ways to get them enthralled with it, because they may think this is boring on the outset, but as they like you guys were mentioning with the videos you were showing, that's a fantastic. There's that word again. I'm trying not to use fantastic. I use it way too many times. The videos you showed about people talking about the history and having to stop because they don't know anymore. Especially in Utah, where a large part of the population is huge on family history and learning more about families in general.
So let's talk just for a second about resources. So where this, like I said earlier, this will be posted on our website, lulpodcast.com. We will tweet it out. But for me and Ingrid, where again can our listeners go and where can we go to find all these gold standards about project-based learning that you were talking about?
Okay, it depends. I think so my guess is it depends how deep do you want to go in this.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the first approach will be the start where we start, probably like one step behind. That is the National Foreign Language Resource Center of the University of Hawaii. It's offering a PBLL symposium, and it's host during January 17th and 18th. It's like a 90 minutes session where you just learn a little bit about PBLL, and they are really, really experts, people that have research about PBLL, and they implement and they are leaders in this. And then if you are still interested in this, you can join the webinar from the same institution, which is, it's called the Fundamentals of Project-Based Language Learning. It's an online institute. It's 5 sessions of an hour and a half, if I remember correctly. 5 Wednesdays, you are there watching some keynote speakers through video, and then you have to accomplish several tasks and follow up with your project and blueprint how Ingrid explained before. And if you want to document yourself only, you just don't want to be implied, you just want to explore a little bit, I will start with the Book Institute of Education. It's BIE.org. And I think those are really good. Those 2 places, National Foreign Language Resource of University of Hawaii, Manoa. That's a really good starting point. And just for information, the Book Institute of Education.
Okay. All right. Great. So basically the website, if you want to go explore and kind of just see what's happening, BIE.org.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Book Institute of Education. And then if you want to have the introductory session and then even move on to the 5 session webinar, that's through the University of Hawaii.
At Manoa.
Sorry. University of Hawaii at Manoa. And that website is nflrc.hawaii.edu. So we will post all that stuff on the website and we'll tweet it out, and you guys can get started with some examples. For any teachers interested in having a face-to-face with Ingrid and Fermin, this year they have conducted a PBLL seminar for teachers, and that's almost finished. But it's Ingrid, tell us really quickly what that seminar entails. And then this seminar, it's not official yet, but it may be offered again next year right here in our district.
Yeah, we've been working with teachers about PBLL, everything that we've learned, all the technology tools that we have, all our experience with the little experience that actually we have. I mean, we are PBLL learners, right? We have implemented 1.5 project. So we have been sharing that with teachers in the district. So maybe next year it could be another possibility. We could talk to our world language supervisor about it. If there are teachers in the district that are interested on it, maybe that could be another possibility.
Yes, we are on because it's a learning experience for us. So as much as we see projects, more ideas that we can have, and it's so exciting.
Great. Well, that's what it's all about, sharing ideas. And Ingrid and Fermin, thank you so much for being here today and for teaching us about PBLL. I honestly feel really excited about it. I can see so much potential, and it fits right in with proficiency and teaches them. In fact, you throw a whole bunch of proficiency standards at them all at once, and they work their way through these complex problems. And that's exactly what would prepare them for being a real user of the language in a real situation. So thank you very much for being here. And
thank you for being our host. And we are so flattered to be here with you guys.
Oh, we feel like we're with celebrities. We hear a lot about you guys all the time.
Yeah. So any teacher in the district needs some help with it or can ask you any question, please contact us. We'll be happy to help. Mm-hmm. And we're still learning, but we have done a couple of projects, and maybe we could help.
We can throw some lights.
Yeah, sure. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, we'd like to thank one more time Ingrid and Fermin for being here today. Personally, think it's a lot of fun that they're from Spain and that they're here in America teaching, and that they've had to – I mean, I know Fermin is working on his master's degree right now. Both he and Ingrid have done all this training on PBLL, and it's not even in their native tongue. I just think – I don't know. I'm impressed by that, and I'm glad they were here today. So just in summary, with project-based language learning, we hope that this is just another technique for you to use as you teach to proficiency. And like Fermin was talking about, this is a project. Project-based language learning is creating projects and environments where the kids have a bundle of proficiency tasks to complete that all work up to one master puzzle that you were talking about, Miles.
Perchance even a grundle of them. And I feel like we try to cater to young teachers, new teachers, all veteran teachers, young and old, however you want to say that. I think that this is a great technique to have and to try to incorporate into your classes. I'm relatively sure that most of us in the district here do some form of projects. And I don't know, Fermin and Ingrid are gone, so I can say this now without reprisal. But no, they know where to find us. I feel like some of the projects we do can be tweaked enough and relatively easily to incorporate them into a project-based language learning technique, where really it comes down to have a project, sure, that you've been doing, so you don't have to change that. But try to find a question that goes into that. And maybe you can't find one that fits it specifically, so you have to modify it some. But there's no sense in, and I hate this expression, by the way, there's no sense in reinventing the wheel.
What do you hate about it? Overused?
No. The expression itself, I just think it's dumb. We don't still have Flintstone rock wheels, do we? Yes, the shape
wheels keep getting better.
The functionality is the same, but they keep improving and getting better. If you gave somebody like a bike tire with the spokes or a car wheel, and even the braking part of the mechanism, a wheel's changed so much since it was originally invented. aside from the shape, you aren't going to recognize much that's the same, right? So I don't like that expression because the wheel's been reinvented many times.
How about?
You've got axles, then you get into inflatable tires. Now we're going away from inflatable tires to run flat tires. And you've got differentials, so the wheels move at different speeds on different sides of the car. So the wheels and the whole mechanism to get that to move has been reinvented so many times.
So maybe more like, we don't want you to reinvent the toothpick.
Okay. People have water picks now.
Are those, okay.
It's just reinventing the wheel. No, you don't have to change the general shape of it, but the meat that goes into it, you may need to change. And that's a kind of a side discussion, but I hate that. I don't like that phrase. Saying that, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. I think you can make some modifications to projects you have and make them more in-depth, really, and more engaging to students.
That's exactly what I was going to say is that driving question seemed to be at the core of the technique of PBLL, and everything that you do drives toward an answer to that question. We just have, there's a lot of information that Fermin and Ingrid provided that we are going to link in our podcast website. And that website, once again, is lulpodcast.com. And I'm going to extend a personal challenge here. We are hoping to get comments on the website about upcoming episodes, about things you'd like to hear, about things you've already heard but have something else to say. We'd really like that to become a forum for teachers in our district, outside of our state, even anywhere in the world, in theory, to pose a few questions about teaching to proficiency, questions and ideas.
So questions, exactly, because I'm all for sharing. Whatever I do, if you like it, use it. And hopefully you feel the same way. I feel like we're all part of the same team, and that's to help the students be lifelong learners, right? And right. Whatever you've got just as much to offer as we do. And we're trying to do different things, and I think that you can help us in that. And
we're all about sharing wheels, right?
That's right. Here, stop using this stone wheel. I've got one that's inflatable and the ride's a little bit better.
Yeah.
I didn't even get into suspension systems. My goodness.
This, we can go on. Well, my challenge out there is I'm going to mail a king size candy bar to whomever makes the first comment on lulpodcast.com.
That's not one of the hosts
associated with the actual hosting of the podcast. So make some comments, please, and let's get that activated. And we're excited that we were able to launch that in just the last couple of weeks. And so from there, I think we will sign off for this week. Miles, thanks for being here again.
Mm-hmm.
With that, we will say auf Wiedersehen.
A plus.
Thanks for getting down with Level Up. See what I'm doing with my hand, but like when you're talking about scaffolding, you start with these kinds of skills, then you build, and then it's hard to.
For those that can't see, which is everybody out there, he's making a horizontal circular motion with an open palm or a palm facing down,
and he's spiral
building upon that, spiraling upwards. Just, I feel like I could do play by play now for Cupcake Wars or something.